Okay, hello everyone. This talk is about I Can video games, and all of you do too. But before I start talking about what I can, I want to talk about all of you lovely lot. So hand up, who has made a game which is publicly available on the internet now? Cool. Who's made a game that's at the completeness level that it could be released, but you haven't? All of you should upload that.
None of my games that have been uploaded are complete.
That's not my problem. If it can be uploaded, if it wouldn't be so terrifyingly incomplete that it would give a man a heart attack, you should upload that game. The next question is, why do you want to make a game? Has anybody here been inspired because of a game that they've played in the last 2 years or that was released in the last 2 years? Okay. How about last 20? Any particular games come to mind?
Trump's Hyping Deluxe.
Okay.
Settlers? Crystal Quest. Old game on the Mac.
Okay. Any others? Any indie games?
Loads.
Any particular ones?
Space Gun's pretty good. But a lot of them that I play, I like.
That's cool. So who am I? I'm Alan. I make games. I joined the Game Bird Society here in 2006. And basically, I've been making games ever since. That's a lot of games. I think I've been making games for 5 years now, which is actually quite a long time. It doesn't feel like that long. I then graduated in 2009. Yeah, I know you're all envious of me, living in the real world. I now do boring web development stuff, but that's not too interesting. I release all my games, I put them on my website, and other than games, like the other thing I do that's relevant here is I'm the maintainer for Flashpunk, which is a Flash game engine. It was created by Chevy Ray, he's some guy, and...
Have you met him?
I have not met him, he lives in Canada. And yeah, so a couple of months ago he decided he wasn't spending enough time on my Canada, so let me maintain it. Cool. I make quite a lot of games. That there is not all of the games I made in 2010, but most of them. So some highlights there. You've got Terrible there, second one. He's a Twitter bot who replies to messages you send him on Twitter, and then if you send him a negative sounding message, he gets unhappier. And if you send him positive messages, he gets re-encouraged and happening, like his avatar was going to change depending on his mood, and it's all very exciting. Got a few other games there, nothing springing out. These are games I've made so far this year. You can see there's fewer of them. Hopefully I'm not going to be making four games in 2012. So you've got Tetris Fight Club there on the top right. That's a fighting game with Tetris blocks. You've got a two-player strategy game in the bottom left. You've got a game where you're an escapologist trapped inside a box with lots of swords poking in, and you're trying to maneuver him to avoid all of the sharp swords. Lots of variety there. And then the game that I've been working on for a while now is called These Robotic Hearts of Mine. It looks like that, and it's a narrative-driven puzzle game, which is kind of a strange way of saying it's a puzzle, and then I added some stories. it's actually my first properly polished game, which is why it's actually interesting to talk about. I've been working on it since last December, which is really quite a long time. I've been working on it sort of on and off, so it's not full-time work, but it does show the result of actually polishing a game rather than just throwing it out there and releasing it and then doing nothing with it. That said, the first version was made in 4 hours, so there's a little bit of both approaches there. It's interesting to talk about because it's the first game I've made particularly got any attention. It was exhibited at the Eurogamer Expo a few weeks ago. There was an Indie Games Arcade there, and it was one of the 12 games chosen for that. So that's really cool and quite encouraging for me because I'm used to not having a lot of feedback. And so it's nice to know that people like it. Hopefully it's getting released next month. Hopefully on iOS, Android, and Flash. Blah, blah, blah. So that's where I am now. It didn't start off quite so swimmingly. The first thing I did was I came along to the 48 Hour competition in November 2006, and I made a kind of crappy game. Well, it wasn't even a game, it was a tech demo. I made a tech demo. It won the competition, but that's not important. basically, I saw games at that point as an interesting programming exercise. I wanted to have these constraints. I wanted to, like, okay, you've got to do this in real time. You've got to come up with all kind of interesting algorithms and data structures to like, really do some interesting programming challenges. And I, at the time, I was like, no, I can't think of ideas. Ideas are hard. I'm just going to program and, yeah, programming BB, ideas are hard. And I made crappy games like that for a few years. There were varying levels of crappiness in there, but by and large they were crappy because I was going at it with this, oh, I'm going to make programmy things. I don't particularly care about games as long as they show off some interesting tech. But eventually I started to come around to the idea that actually game design is interesting. Game design is the relevant part of this, and games are really fun to design. And I didn't really care so much about the technology. I was like, well, I'll just do whatever. I'll do it in the quickest, hackiest way possible to get this game idea into the world. And I didn't have trouble coming up with ideas so much because every time I created a this is going to be tech game, in some way it flew around in my brain enough that a few years later on it was like, oh yeah, that was okay tech, but maybe there's an interesting game idea in there as well. And so just if I made games for long enough, I would have just inevitably got drawn into the actual game rather than the tech. So I don't have a problem with ideas. In fact, I have far too many ideas now. I have too many unfinished prototypes that I think, oh yes, it would be awesome if I could just finish it, you know. But it didn't always used to be that way. Now, I want all of you to make games, not tech demos, games, actual games. They're playable and they're fun. And every one of you in this room can make a game. You can make a game on your own. You don't need to make a team. Like you might choose to join a team or to collaborate with a small number of people, but every one of you could on your own make a game. Even if you can't program, even if you can't draw, even if you can't make music. Because you can find free art assets online, you can use a free program that lets you make games using a visual style or something. There are a lot of tools and assets and everything out there that make life really easy if you want to make a game, and therefore there's really no excuse for not doing it. And it's not just video games. Board games are games. Games, I want you to make games. I don't care if they're video games. I want you to make interesting experiences. Games like Tag. There's a game called Ninja, which is a great game. It's not a video game. There's no technology in it. But it's a great, fun game. And no matter how much Sam shakes his head, it will still be an incredibly fun experience. There's another game called Johann Sebastian Joust, which does have technology. It uses PlayStation Move controllers. And there's some music playing. And when the music is playing fast, you can move your controller faster. And when it's slower, you have to move more slowly. And if you move too quickly, if you move the controller too quickly, then you're out. And so you're trying to move around without juddering your controller, but trying to tap everybody else's so they go out. And that's a playground game. And it's really fun. And more games like that should exist. Multiple choice story game, like a choose your own adventure. That's one of the easiest things to make. There's a couple of really trivial tools to make games like that. So even if you have no particular interest in that, it's so easy. You might as well play around with it. And if you are interested in storytelling, or you think you might become interested in storytelling, it's worth experimenting with that kind of genre, because it's so easy. Mind games, I mean, like, I'm thinking here just two people in a room, no props, nothing, just trying to outthink the other player. I mean, there's some of that in board games, but you don't necessarily need a board. There's a kind of genre called gnomics, which I played a game like that recently. Basically, you start out with a starting set of rules, and then every round of the game, you get to vote on amendments to those rules. And so you're proposing a rule that might affect other rules, and then you can repeal rules. And the aim of the game is to win, but the player who wins is defining these rules, which are voted in and out and changed by the players. And there's no physical pieces required. That's not a board game, that's not a video game, that's just a mind game. And it's really fun. And again, more games can be like that. So, here's a quick bullet point list of things you should know before making a game. Games evolve. Games sort of become what they want to become. If you go in with a preset idea about what a game is, then you're probably going to ignore a lot of options that that game can turn into that would be really interesting. The most interesting and important thing about developing a game is changing it, adapting it to how people respond to it, making it so that you know, but yeah, so changing it and exploring where that game could go. You should also know that constraints are inspirational. Every constraint you add to something, saying, okay, you have to make it under this theme, or this game has to be made within a 96 by 96 pixel screen, or a 1 by 1 pixel screen, as you were doing yesterday. Constraints really, really help you to come up with games that you wouldn't otherwise have thought of, and that nonetheless you really, really like. You should, whatever game idea you come up with, you're going to think, okay, this is really awesome. But that game idea will almost inevitably be too complicated. So you need to reduce it down to the simplest possible thing that could possibly demonstrate that idea. And then you need to simplify it further, because that game idea will still be too complicated. You need to make the thing that you can make in 3 hours, maybe. If it doesn't have flashy art, so be it. If it doesn't have more than one color, that's fine. You need to just do things as quickly as possible, and to do that you need to do as little as possible. Particles are generally important because they cover up your crappy art. If you have lots of particles, nobody notices that the game doesn't look pretty, because it does look pretty because you've got particles. Particles cover a multitude of sins. Sound is mandatory. If you don't have sound, you think, no, well, it sounds a lot of work. I don't need sound. It's just a silly little thing. It takes 2 seconds, well, it takes 5 minutes to an hour to generate random sound effects from a random sound effect program. But they add so much. And then, like, good sound effects and good music add so much more again. But you need some level of sound effects, otherwise the game feels empty. It's something you don't realise is missing, but once you add it, you realise it was so important. And then, so your first games are going to suck. Petri Puro, the developer of Crayon Physics, said that your first 10 games are going to suck. You need to create 10 games before you're going to create anything that's worthwhile. Somebody on Twitter earlier said that your first N games are going to be rubbish. N is at least 5. And even more than that, even after you've got past your all my games suck phase, your first prototype of any given idea, that will suck too. You can't just have an idea and then throw it out there and then see what happens and then, oh, this is amazing, I can just publish this. It's never going to be, frankly, you're doing well if it's playable. Because you will not appreciate how hard your game is, how unintuitive your game is. Your first version of your game will have so many problems, and you will need to fix them very, very slowly. My creative process, this is, in general, how I approach games. I make as many of them as possible, and I hope that one might be okay. Initially, I had less success. Now, I think I make games, and some of them are okay. And to make as many games as you can, I need to make them really, really quickly. So I just do the quickest, hackiest thing possible. You need to make games like you want to get sent to programmer hell, basically. You do the simplest thing that could possibly ever work. And then once you've got this first prototype done, this ugly, horrible first prototype, you need to get as many people as you possibly can to play it. And hopefully you would watch them play it, so you get direct feedback, but if that's not possible, then just uploading it and saying, give me what you think. That's good too. You have no idea if your game works or not. In fact, most of the time you'll think that the game works, and it won't, because you already know everything that's going on, and other people don't. Preferably, you wouldn't ask, you can get your friends to play it, well, but don't weigh in their opinions too much, because there's always a tendency to go, oh, wow, you did that in 48 hours? Wow, that's the best square jumping on another square I've ever seen. there is a tendency to not want to criticize your friends too much. Incidentally, if any of you want feedback on your games, I promise to be as harsh as I possibly can. So, in general, the approach I generally use is I upload the game after 4 hours or 48 hours or however long. If I'm doing a 48 hour thing, I will upload it hopefully before 36 hours just to get some feedback and just some verification that what I'm doing isn't totally awful. So I upload it, I'll post about it on Twitter, on IRC, on wherever. And hopefully some people will play it, and ideally they'll say, oh, this is kind of interesting. It's completely broken, but it's interesting. If there's no reaction at all, then it's kind of worrying. Or if the response is unilaterally, what's going on, this is interesting, then it's probably worrying. But you need to get a lot of people playing it to get that kind of feedback. And so after you've done that, once you've got this first prototype done and out there and you've got some feedback, well, you know it's going to suck. And it's usually going to suck more than you realise, because again, you don't realise how unintuitive it is, all that. And if you think it's good, it's probably not, because you're probably missing something. So if you think it's bad, it's probably worse than you think. If you think it's good, it's probably not. But it's okay, because now you have a choice. You can invest time to improve your game. Okay, I'm going to trade off X amount of time for hopefully Y amount of improvement to this game. And maybe you'll get something good, or if not good, then better. So ideally, you go, okay, I release this first version, it had this problems, I think I know how to solve that one and that one, so I'm going to try this and that. And then you release that, and then people play it, and then you go, yeah, that worked. Oh, they don't tell you, you look at them, and you realize that it's working better in those areas. And ideally, that would be the case. Or maybe not. Maybe you don't understand how to solve these problems, or maybe it's way more complicated, or maybe you run into a bug or something, and it ends up being way more work than you thought it would be. And now you're back to, well, you can invest some time, and you can try and improve this. And sometimes that's worth doing, and sometimes it's not. Sometimes you just need to let one project die to move on to something else. And really, it's just experience that lets you know whether a project is worth spending more time on it to hopefully improve it some more, or whether however much time you're going to put into it, what you've got now is already the optimal amount of result to input time. And I had something else to say there. No, who cares? So it's quite important that you talk to other game developers, because there's a really good and enthusiastic community out there. And if you're just making games on your own, you never show them to anybody, you're just working on your magnum opus for 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, in your bedroom, don't show it to anybody, you're going to get crazy. There's a lot of good places that you can talk about what you're doing and just socialize with other people. Obviously, there's Word Game Design here, but then online, there's forums. I really encourage all of you to, if you make a game or if you make a prototype, if you spend more than 3 hours on it, post it to the forums. And if all of us did that, then there would be a really good community of people posting interesting prototypes. Also, there's something called Super Friendship Club, which is a small community of indie game developers. And it's very much focused on making games. So if you have a game idea, you can go there, you can start a thread saying, this is a game idea I want to make. And people say, that's a good idea, or I'm concerned about this aspect, have you considered this? And they also run a game pageant, which is kind of like a competition, except it's not a competition. Kind of like a game jam, except there's no jam. I just said that, I didn't even think. So it's every 2 months they run a month-long pageant with a theme, and you make a game. It's pretty cool. And there's some cool people just hanging out there, and it's a nice small community. There's Chicksauce, which is kind of the opposite. It's a massive, sprawling community. It's worth being aware of. It is worth posting projects there, because there's a lot of people there, and sometimes if you post a project there, like, you'll get a good reaction. Sometimes it will just get glossed over, but that is the nature of big communities. But it's worth being part of TikTok as well. Twitter, if you're not on Twitter and you are actively interested in making games, it would be worth thinking about it. Because certainly for me, Twitter is a great resource for just seeing indie game developers interact and talk about various issues, and it's all just really interesting stuff. In real life, there's obviously this. There's Midlands Indies, which is a group of indie game developers who meet up once a month, alternating between Coventry and Leamington, so it's incredibly convenient for everybody who lives or campus. Well, less campus, less convenient than this, I guess. But and yeah, if you want to chat with people who aren't members of this society, which I would say is a good thing because you don't want to get too cliquey, then yeah, come along to Midlands Indies. The next one is the 9th of November? Let's say that. It's on the Wednesday. Second Wednesday of November. And then there are TIG Jams. These are physical collaboration events organized, well, sort of linked with TIG Source. And they're basically 30, 40 people congregate on a cafe or somewhere and make games for a weekend. It's more unplanned and impromptu than the World Game Design 48-hour competition. Because there's no theme for the whole weekend, it means there's a lot more socializing and meeting new people and hanging out. And there's at the UK TIG Jams, there's often maybe two or three 4-hour competitions per day, 3-hour competitions, which are kind of scary and terrifying and really, really fun and worth doing. And yeah, so TIG Jam, I went to my first one at the start of 2010, and I'm really happy to have met some of the people who I've met at those things. So yeah, they're awesome. I think the next one is going to be in January. I'll mention it when the details are announced. But that's really cool. The other thing is, there are a lot of competitions and jams which will give you an excuse to make games, and you should be making as many games as you can. So here are a few. You've got the Game Design 48 Hour competition, that'll be in November. You've also got Blood and Dare, that's 3 times a year. Next one is in December. I highly recommend that all of you take part in Blood and Dare. It's a 48 Hour competition like the Game Design one, but it's online, so you've got people from all over the world taking part. It's getting increasingly more massive. I believe the last one had over 500 entries. But it's a great experience. They reckon, so they're in the main competition for London there, you have to make everything yourself. You can't use existing art assets, you can't use existing audio assets, which forces you to do these things yourself and learn how to do them, which isn't the best path for time investment, but for some reason worked really well, at least it did for me, for getting into the right mindset of I can make games, and making games is really, really cool. So that's a really cool competition. Click of the Month is a monthly 2-hour game jam. You have 2 hours to make a game. They recommend you use Click and Play, which is the most ancient, decrepit piece of software known to the game making world. But it's so simple and so utterly useless that it's quite endearing, and you can almost make some interesting things in it. But you don't have to use that. You can make games in whatever you like, but if you're using C++, you'll be lucky if you can get something to compile in 2 hours. So there's something to be said for simple game-making tools for things like that. And I've found that 2-hour competitions, 3-hour competitions, 4-hour competitions, they're a great tool for coming up with cool ideas. I've taken part in Click of the Month maybe 5 or 6 times, and at least 4 or 5 of those games turned out interesting enough to work on afterwards. It's kind of like, I sometimes say, if you have a deadline of a month, then it's going to take you a year to finish a project. If you try and come up with an idea you think you can make in 2 hours, maybe you can get it done in a weekend or a week. But it helps you sort of focus and aim really, really small. because you have to if you think you've only got 2 hours to make it. And that kind of idea can also be a really cool idea, but you might not think that it's a cool enough idea if you're thinking, oh, I'm just going to make a game. What's a really cool game? You're not going to think of the small two-hour game because it's not boring. But actually, there's some really interesting two-hour games that can be made. You just need to force yourself to make them. Game Prototype Challenge. I believe that's running it now. I can't remember the themes. But that's a bi-monthly competition where you have a week to make a game. It gives you themes. TIG Jams, like I said, they're a physical event. You have tons of three-hour jams throughout the weekend. Global Game Jam is a worldwide event every January where you congregate in places around the world and form teams and make a game all on one theme. So there's hundreds and I think there are 1,000 games submitted to the last one. And it's pretty cool. And there's loads of other competitions. There's Pi Week, which is a week-long game-making competition where you have to use Python. There's one for specific genres. There's an adventure game, 48-hour thing. There's a roguelike 48-hour thing, one of those might be a week. But yeah, there's loads of competitions and things that can give you themes and inspiration and basically a kick up the arse to make something. Which, if you're something like me, you might need. I asked on Twitter about 5 hours ago if anybody had any advice for first-time game developers, because at the time I hadn't written my talk yet. And so I got all of them together. So... That was the first piece of advice I got. You should all get a real job. Isn't that inspirational? Maybe you can consider that. There's something to be said, actually, for not making games for a living, because then you have to make the kind of games that will give you money, and often you won't be able to. And so keeping it as a hobby is what I've done up until this point, and it's worked out pretty well for me. Somebody else says, finish your games no matter what, which there's definitely something to be said there. Alas, the definition of finished is very, very unclear. You have to kind of interpret that however you like. Certainly, I would say release your games no matter what. If you release it but it's not finished, then at least it's out there. Don't baby your game. Make it quick and ugly and collaborate. Then you can make it beautiful. Which is just the same for the thing I was saying earlier. Just hack it out as quickly as possible. It's not some amazing idea that's going to change the world. You just need to hack it up and then see if it's worth doing something with. And if it is, if you're a terrible artist, find somebody to do art. But don't go, I'm making this game. Who wants to make art? And then 5 months down the road, you realize, oh, this is a crappy game. Too bad all your art's being wasted on a crappy game. Be sure to love what you do. That's pretty important. You need to be interested in what you're doing. Sometimes it's quite hard. Sometimes you're like, ah, everything I do is rubbish. This idea is never going to be interesting. Who's going to want to play fighting game with Tetris blocks? That's a stupid idea. Even if other people think an idea is good, then it's still sometimes hard to make yourself believe that an idea is good. But it certainly helps if you are really excited about what you're doing. Making games takes longer than playing them. Well, it depends. I guess it depends on the game. I could make some games quicker than I could play other games, but it can be more satisfying sometimes. I'm not going to disagree there. Rule number one isn't make sure it's a game. It's make sure it's fun, which is pretty damn true. There are some exceptions. If you're intentionally making a game and you know that it shouldn't be fun, sometimes you can get away with them. There are valid games which aren't fun. But most of the time, pretty much every single time, you should be aiming to be fun if you know that there's some reason why it shouldn't be fun. I don't make the kind of games where I need to worry about, should this game be fun or not? I don't know. I make the kind of games where, yes, this should be fun, for a given definition of fun. Sometimes frustrating counts. if you can't do it at 60 FPS, then don't bother. This guy, he's from the background of a C++ programmer from Freestyle Games. That's very much the mindset he's working on. It doesn't have to be at 60 FPS, but if you're talking to him, it does. Your first end games will be terrible. So think small, get them out of the way quick. I absolutely agree with that. N is at least 5, it's probably higher. You kind of just have to find out by making games until you strike one that isn't terrible. And then you have to hope that you're right that it's not terrible, but that's another thing. This is Phil's addition. Hofstadter's law, you'll underestimate the impact of particles and sound effects, even when you take into account Hofstadter's law. It's funny, it's also really, really true. You do underestimate them no matter what you do. Sound effects and particles, they add a lot, and you don't realise they're missing until you add them. I don't know what this guy is going on about. Games can hold philosophical problems, such as Tetris. Stacking everything in life is impossible. Sort things out properly. I'll leave you to draw your own conclusion from that. This guy posted a link to 97 things every game developer should know. I'm not going to comment there because there's significantly more than 97 of them. Make games as distinct from just talking about it or daydreaming about it. He's exactly right. If you have an idea in your head, you're doing it wrong. You need to be typing. You need to be making that game. There's no point in waiting, there's no point in, as my friend is doing, writing up a massive design document and thinking about every possible combination of things that could possibly go into the game, and designing it absolutely in his head, and then at some point in the future, I guess he's going to have to make it, but he'd do a lot better if he sat down and made it now. And I believe that's everything. That's all the advice I got from Twitter. But that was some cool advice. I agree with most of it, if not all.